This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. Well, it's the first Friday of the month, the first Friday of the new year. And the first Friday of the month is the day we talk about dog care, behavior, and training here on the Afternoon Magazine. One of our regular guests, dog trainer Carol Lindholm, is here, and she's brought with her a special guest. Her name is Amy Fisher, and she's sitting in this month for Jim Keel. Carol is with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. Amy is in the Companion Animal Biology and Humane Education Department of Animal Sciences at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Both of our guests are active in the Champaign County Humane Society, and Amy's interests include cats.
Absolutely.
Another cat lover. She's done a good deal of work, for example, in foster care of cats. So listeners, this afternoon, if you've got questions about companion animals, cats, dogs, give us a call. We look forward to hearing from you. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number is 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. WILL. Welcome to the two of you. Carol, it's good to see you again. Amy, it's nice to meet you.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Carol, you brought Amy with you. Tell us a little bit about her.
Well, I've known Amy since she moved to the community. I think she moved here in 2005.
Yes.
And just found her to be delightful. She's a cat person, which is a nice counterbalance to today's show because all the frustrated cat people out there that can call in now and have the questions answered, I think that's good. Amy's now on the board of directors of the Humane Society and a great asset to our organization and just an all-around delightful person. She's always there pitching in to help.
Oh, Carol. She's so nice. I have to say, though, I do have a dog. But
she does have a dog.
She's surrounded by eight cats in the house. So.
Oh, wow. So how does she do, this dog?
She acts very similar to a cat.
Really?
Yeah, a tiny beagle, so she can fit on the back of the couch and just she fits in. She's very cat-like.
Everybody gets along then?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Very interesting. Okay, we got some calls coming in this afternoon already. I didn't mention, before we get to the calls, I wanted to mention the Illini Pet Pod. This is one of the outreach efforts of the Department of Animal Science at the University of Illinois in conjunction with the College of Veterinary Medicine. You want to tell us just a little bit about the Illini Pet Pod, the podcast?
Sure. We have a really good time with the Pet Pod. We have joined forces with VetMed and we take a lot of the material that they use in their pet columns. So it's very useful, practical information for pet owners. And we've basically just converted that to, you know, an audio format to get more information out there so people can better care for their dogs and cats.
Okay. And you'll find, listeners, you'll find a link to the Illini Pet Pod at our website, will.illinois.edu. You can go to this week's schedule for the Afternoon Magazine and you'll find it. Or even easier, just Google it, Illini Pet Pod. Well, let's talk with some listeners now. We're going to go to California and talk with a listener in San Jose, California. Line 4, good afternoon.
Hi, my name is Debbie, and I have a question about teaching my golden retriever to fetch.
Okay, Debbie, go ahead.
He's a male golden, and he's 7, and he knows all the parts of fetch, the chase it, get it, bring it back. He's just not very good at putting those all in order. I've done a lot of training with him, but I don't want a obedience fetch. I want an enthusiastic play fetch.
Mm-hmm.
I'm visually impaired, and what I want to be able to do is go to a park, throw my Frisbee, and have him reliably return it so it's not lost somewhere and I can't find it. So what I'm looking for is a way to teach him hold so he knows for sure not to drop it until I tell him. And I'm looking for a positive way. Most of the ways that I've seen are kind of negative and mean.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I understand your question, and it's a good one because mm-hmm. teaching fetch is different than a dog fetching naturally.
Right.
So if I were to do it, I would break it down into three components. First of all, getting the dog enthused about the item that you want him to fetch, and don't restrict it to a Frisbee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, use other things, too, so you get a reliable fetch. Picking up the toy and bringing it back to you, that's where you employ your recall, so the dog comes enthusiastically back to you. Okay. So, and that's where, you know, you have to become a great actor, and it's so, you're always so enthusiastic, and he always then will return to you. Now, the third part, the hold, is a little more difficult to teach, but I think you'll be able to do it if you can visualize what the dog is trying to do. He's coming back to you, which is what you want. Now you're incorporating something that's a little more difficult. I want you to hold the item until I take it from you. So in order to achieve that, you're going to have to, and this is the way I would do it, you're going to want to exchange something for what he's bringing you. Mm-hmm. And you're going to want to incorporate that word hold or something similar. So when you when he comes up in front of you and he's got the item in his mouth, you're going to say hold and then exchange it for something very tasty, a little treat, and then I want you to say good hold and then take it from his mouth and then give him the treat.
He gets so excited about coming to me and bringing me things and getting the treat, he drops it about 10 feet away.
Okay, okay.
He turns over to me all boisterous and joyful.
Yes, because, okay, so that's why, then we're going to teach him to come up to you and sit in front of you.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so we're going to add that extra element on the recall, have the dog come into you and tell him to sit as he's approaching. Okay, this is the way we do it with puppies. As he's approaching, when he gets to that critical dropping it point, say, come on forward, come on. I want you to sit in front of me, talk to him. Does he know sit?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, then you're fine. Have him sit in front of you and then do the exchange. Or tell him good hold and then give him a reward for that. So you're going to add two more elements to this exercise. But if you break it down into those steps, it'd be a lot easier for him to understand what it is you want. He's
so
doing
I'm training each step separately.
I would.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're very welcome. Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. Good afternoon.
What can we do for you?
I'm calling to find out if either of your guests can give me some contact information for dog rescue groups for Goldens, German Shepherds, and or labs, and not necessarily purebreds. They could be mixed.
Well, is she from Champaign? There are several good golden rescue groups in the area. The most, the nearest one to us is in the northern suburban area, and it's called As Good As Gold.
Okay.
There's one in the, well, there's several.
And suburban area, you mean suburban to Chicago?
Yes, northern suburban area. And I know those people. They've got a very good group of people. There are several in the St. Louis area.
Okay.
There are several in the Indianapolis area.
Okay.
I believe there's one in southern Illinois. There are several in Wisconsin. A Google search will bring up an amazing number of rescue groups.
I've done that. I just was hoping that either of you had maybe worked with them so one could get some guidance on, you know, quality of the group.
I have worked with, I have personally worked with As Good As Gold.
Okay.
But I have not worked with any shepherd groups. Lab rescue, well, okay, this is a perfect segue.
Yeah.
Ed Kieser's wife, Lucia. Today is Emma. Their black lab. Today is her 13th birthday.
Happy birthday, Emma.
To Emma, yeah. And we were talking earlier, I did the home visit for a lab rescue group. And I did it, Lucia wanted to adopt a black lab. I didn't know Lucia, and rescue groups do require a home visit.
Yeah,
and I did these. Yeah, I did these for a lab rescue group out of Indiana. And I interviewed Lucia, and I approved her for adoption, and she adopted Emma, and the rest is history, and
they are living happily ever after,
yeah,
as they say.
I think that was 10 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. But there is a good lab rescue group. There are several. The one that I worked with was Central Indiana Lab Rescue Association. The acronym is CILRA, C-I-L-R-A.
Say that again, please.
C-I-L-R-A, Central Indiana Lab Rescue Association. And I believe they're still going strong. I used to get their newsletter. I haven't for a bit, so.
Okay. I'll use those terms for a search then and see if I can't find them on the Internet.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your assistance.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Other questions, comments are invited for our guests this afternoon, Carol Lindholm and Amy Fisher. 333-9455, that's 333-WILL, that's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Well, Amy, tell us a little bit about your interests in cats, and does this go way back? And tell us a little bit about your work with fostering cats, since we've just been talking about rescue groups.
Well, fostering is a terrific opportunity anybody can get into. Our Champaign County Humane Society has an active, wonderful foster program. And I also fostered quite a bit in Wisconsin and Florida, where I lived previously. And it's just a great way to take animals into your home and provide them a place to maybe gain weight if they need to put on weight before they're spayed or neutered, or just give them a little more socialization, you know, just maybe give them whatever they're needing to get up to the place where they can be ready to be adopted. And so my husband and I have engaged in that activity for years. We fostered dozens of cats and kittens, and it's very rewarding. It carries over directly then into my role at the university. I work a lot with our undergraduate students, and in the animal sciences department we have so many students who want to go on to be veterinarians, and we have to help those students who may not go on to veterinary school because it's very competitive, and so we get them exposed to an excited to different careers, like in the animal sheltering, animal control, those sorts of areas. And so the fostering and the volunteering at the Humane Society is something that I can share with my students as well, so that's really exciting.
Yeah, now, what would make someone a good candidate for fostering? Because I would think that there would be people out there who maybe once they think about it, they'd say, I can't do it right now, or I'm really not of that temperament to be able to take an animal in mm-hmm. and then have it go out again, for example.
It is hard. It is very hard, especially when you first get started, to let the animal go. But, you know, you take a step back and realize that you're helping the animal overall, and that this is a good thing. The ideal candidate for fostering, well, first of all, you do need to be 21 in the state of Illinois, and you certainly need to have the time to commit to an animal who will be kept separate from the other animals in your home because of the risk of disease transmission and just giving that animal its privacy and its relaxing area. So you do need to have the time and the space to commit to fostering, but it's incredibly rewarding.
Yeah. And we were talking a little bit about animal rescue groups. What kinds of things, the home visit, that's a good critical thing that needs to happen. What other kinds of things would you look for if you were going to get involved with a group? You'd say, this is a group that is a solid group. Carol?
No, that's a really good question, because many of these organizations, when they first start, they have to be, you know, not-for-profit. You've got to run it like a business. You can't have just a bunch of people that love animals, because it's not going to succeed that way. You have to have foster homes. That's critical, because rescue groups do not have facilities in which to house the animals that come in. You have to have rather stringent guidelines about dogs that you accept as well as dogs that are adopted out. Most rescue organizations, and it's sad, but they can't take in dogs that have severe behavior problems. Dogs that have bitten people in the past are usually declined by rescue groups. They can't do that. Knowing people within that organization, and if you're into a breed pretty well, mm-hmm. you get to know people.
Mm-hmm.
Either through showing or through the various lists that are out there, you get to know people. Meeting the people, meeting the dogs, you'll feel a certain affinity for a group. Some don't make it because they don't treat it as a business, and then it'll morph into another organization that's sometimes comprised of former volunteers. The ones that have been in business, well, that's what it is. I mean, it sounds cold, but that's what it is. They have been in foster rescue work for a long time are usually the more successful ones. And knowing your breed well and knowing breeders well, and breeders and rescue groups often will work in conjunction mm-hmm. with each other. I think that doing your homework, and this woman was very wise to call and inquire about some in the area. Searching the internet always is good. Finding people that have adopted dogs from an organization is a good way to determine how good they are. So
Yeah, I would suspect that there would be people in various communities affiliated with humane shelters who might also have some ideas or be able to help mm-hmm. out. Or if you're interested in getting involved, maybe the first step would be to volunteer at the shelter.
Oh, sure, by all means. By all means. And foster care, now I don't foster. I just know that I don't have the emotional ability to distance myself. Mm-hmm. I don't have the time, and so I don't do it. I have friends that do it and are very successful at it, but they do feel grief and sadness when they return the animals
sure.
to the shelter. But you have to know that they're going to go to a good home, and then that frees you up to continue that good deed, to continue to foster more animals.
Right. Yeah. It's so worth it. And the neatest thing that for me is, especially with a lot of our students who, they cannot make a lifelong commitment to an animal. And other people are in that situation too. Maybe they know they're going to mm-hmm. be moving overseas or whatnot, but they still want to have an animal in their lives. You know, fostering is a great way to really do something meaningful without making that lifelong commitment that you cannot keep.
Yeah. What kind of opportunities are there for volunteering at a shelter?
Well, our website, cuhumane.org, they have a list of volunteer opportunities up there. Volunteering for a shelter is just a little bit more than just walking in and taking a dog out for a walk. You need to be trained in, and we do that. We have a training program in how to handle both cats and dogs. Mm-hmm. You know, there's an art and skill to that.
Sure. And the small animals.
We always forget about our little pocket pals out there. How to behave around animals, how to interact with animals, how to watch their behaviors. And there's things that you can do to volunteer at a shelter that don't require any interaction necessarily. If you just want to be there to do good things, there's always things that you can do, even running a load of towels.
Oh,
and blankets,
uh-huh.
little things like that.
And we have people who volunteer strictly at our events. You know, they never have the animal interaction, but they're very involved in our events. They can fold newspapers. They can help with the website, taking pictures. I mean, any skill that you have that you want to share, the shelter can use it, definitely.
Yeah. Speaking of events, anything coming up either with the shelter or with the dog training club?
Well, dog training club classes will be starting this coming week. Yeah, they will. I think the 10th. If that's a Thursday, is our orientation. I believe that's Thursday.
Next week, yeah.
Yeah, they start already. Winter's a great time to get out and train your dog because there are no conflicting outdoor events. There's no soccer. There's no little league. You know, the whole family can be involved in the wintertime. And actually, I've found over the years that I've felt that the highest, I don't want to say success rate, but people are most pleased with their progress during the winter months because you didn't have to do anything outside. You don't have to mow the lawn. You can focus on what you're doing.
Yeah.
And Amy, I'm going to let her talk about our program at the shelter right now, which is extraordinarily clever.
It's very good timing since some of us ate a bit much over the holidays and maybe sat around a little bit too much. We have a fat cat adoption promotion, and it's encouraging us to lose weight along with our companions, but we have a neat promotion where if you come to the shelter, we do have some overweight animals, and if you are interested in adopting them, there are incentives that go along with that.
We don't make you get on a scale. The cat does. The person doesn't have to.
But it is good timing, definitely.
Yeah. Now, what kinds of things? Well, this brings up a good area to talk about. I read recently that we're seeing more overweight companion animals mm-hmm. as we're getting bigger. Our animals are getting bigger. They're sitting on the couch with us. And this can lead to health problems for them as well as it does for us. So when you have an animal that needs to slim down a little bit, you know, we kind of know what we should be doing for ourselves. But what do you do for an animal?
I'm going to let Amy talk about fat cats because I don't know how to reduce the weight on a cat.
Fat cats are tricky because they're obligate carnivores, they do have this higher protein requirement than a lot of other animals do. And what happens is if they lose weight too quickly, you can really mess around with their metabolism, and they end up storing fat in their liver, getting what we call hepatic lipidosis or fatty liver disease. And so you really want to help a cat gradually lose its excess weight as opposed to losing it too quickly. And so, you know, the best way that I've found is simply to just closely monitor the animal's food intake. And in a multi-cat household like ours, that's difficult because we would have to separate our individual cats and make sure we're closely watching, because otherwise you just, there's literally a big trough of food and you don't know who's eating what. So it does take that extra energy to separate the overweight animal and closely monitor the food intake. And then we increase the playtime as much as we possibly can.
Yeah.
My husband and I built an outdoor enclosure in which our cats go outside to play. And that has helped with weight reduction at our house, too. And we just try to keep it active and keep them playing.
Yeah. We have a stairway in the house, carpeted, you know, going up to the second floor. And that is a wonderful, you know, throw the toy up and boom, you know, great kind of short, intense play period a couple times a day. And it's a lot of fun for us and the cat as well.
I am so glad I let Amy answer that. I just didn't know that they could get fatty liver. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And they're also at risk for diabetes, too, when they get heavy. Tell us about this enclosure that you built. This is interesting because I am of the school of I don't let my cat out to wander.
Right. We never used to. And then once we got creeping up to 6, 7, 8 cats, we realized, you know, we really do need to provide them more resources and more space to keep everyone happy. And so our enclosure, it just consists of the bottom is a buried chicken wire. So we have chicken wire at the bottom that's buried in so that raccoons cannot dig in and the cats cannot dig out. And then it's a flexible deer netting that extends up about 7 feet. And the flexibility prevents the cats from climbing it and being able to get out. And so they have a little pet door that leads out into this in our backyard, and it's been up for 2 years now, and they just love it. No problems.
It's a great idea.
What do you have in there for them to play with? Or do they just run around?
They just run around, and, you know, there are plenty of insects to paw at and birds to watch, so they just love being out in the grass and rolling around, and they even enjoy it in the winter.
Yeah, lots of things to smell and watch and listen to, all that. Stimulus is really good.
Well, Amy and her husband build these fantastic cat trees.
He builds them.
Oh, he builds them?
I just help with the kitty testing part of
it. I mean, these things are, they're marvelous cat trees. Yeah. They're so sturdy, you could sit on them yourself, you know, and they're just fantastic cat trees.
And that's really important for us with so many cats to maximize the vertical space in our house. That's why we started making the trees. Because cats love to climb and be up, and you have so much extra space towards the ceiling that you're not using. So, if you want to find ways to let the cats get up there, it helps with a multi-cat home.
Yeah. We're talking this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine about companion animals. We have two guests with us, Carol Lindholm. She's one of our regular guests on this program. This is a topic we take up on the first Friday of the month. We talk about dogs. Carol is with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, and this month she's brought with her Amy Fisher, a special guest. She's sitting in this month for Jim Keel. Carol with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. Amy is in the Companion Animal Biology and Humane Education Department. That's a mouthful.
That's a long one.
Of the Animal Sciences Division at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, where she is a teaching associate and extension specialist. Both our guests are active in the Champaign County Humane Society. Listeners, if you've got a question about dogs, cats, companion animals, give us a call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Any other events coming up for the Humane Society?
Oh, I want to talk about an event that Amy's going to address called Pet Stravaganza, which is the third year for this.
This will be the third year.
Third year, and that'll be coming up sooner
April
than we
26th.
Think. I'm going to let Amy talk about this. It's done in conjunction with the Humane Society, and the Dog Training Club has a function there as well.
This is the third year, Pet Stravaganza. In late April, we've had a large-scale community event in the Stock Pavilion on campus. And for people who haven't visited yet, it's just a great day where the whole community comes out. And my favorite part is that we have so many different community groups involved, the Humane Society, Animal Control, Horse Rescues, you name it, most of the animal welfare groups within the Champaign-Urbana area host an interactive exhibit at this activity, and families come and learn about pet care and all sorts of different topics to help us share our lives with animals better. And so we were just thrilled with the first year. In 2006, we had about 1,000 visitors, and we almost tripled that last year. And so we're really excited to draw a big crowd again and offer that educational day.
Oh, very good. So mark your calendar for that. Now, will that be something that you'd find on the Animal Companion page or the Dog Training
Club? It was in the paper last year, too.
It's in the paper. It'll
be keep an eye out for that.
But even being part of the animal welfare community for so many years, it is astonishing to go to this event, and there is not a creature that's not represented by somebody in this community. It's just amazing to me. Including little serpents and rodents, and they're part of our lives too.
Well, that makes me think of the wildlife clinic at the College of Veterinary Medicine,
and they're a huge part of this event as well. VetMed comes down, and last year the wildlife clinic brought their raptors and educated the public about interacting with wildlife.
Must be a great event for kids. I bet they love it.
I think it's geared toward children or youth, I should say. I did the bingo game that first year, and that was very, very much fun. I'll never forget. I got painted as a dog. I had my nose and whiskers, and
Carol had the microphone. Though. You can't
yeah, and on. I was had the microphone. I had a ball, but I forgot that I had been painted as a dog. And I went to the bank afterward, and I was in my car at the drive-up window, and you know you can hear the exchanges between the teller and the occupants of the other vehicle. So they were having the exchange, and I'm turning, and I'm watching them. I thought, you know, what are these people talking about? And they're looking at me. And I thought, what are they looking at me for? And I looked in my rearview mirror, and there I was with these whiskers and a pink nose. But it was very much fun. I missed it last year. I couldn't attend last year, and I really regretted it.
We missed you, Carol.
Yes, it was fun.
Okay, so, well, I'll have to get out. And I've not gone, so I'll have to
I'll make sure you get a notification about it.
Okay.
How's that?
You'll come knocking on my door.
Yeah.
When did you begin your interest in animals, and how did you decide that you were going to make a career out of your love for animals?
Well, as soon as I graduated high school, I started a program in animal sciences, but actually at the time it was in more of an agricultural production animal emphasis, and my research background is in vitro embryo production in cattle, actually. So I kind of have taken a bit of a turn in my career. But I was living in Florida doing my postdoctoral work about 3 years ago and getting really involved in fostering and also in a trap neuter return program that they have there called Operation Catnip. And it's a high volume clinic where they spay and neuter up to 200 cats per clinic day and then release and monitor them in feral communities to help combat the overpopulation. And I became so interested in that and passionate about that I realized I was more excited to go do my volunteer work than I was to actually go to my lab and do my research work. And so the timing was just perfect that this position opened at the University of Illinois in companion animal biology, and it was just meant to be. I've loved it here ever since.
Yeah. So what are you teaching?
We teach a basic cat and dog biology course to our undergraduates. We also coordinate a lot of internship and experiential learning opportunities. So, for example, we send students out to the Humane Society to do different internships there. We also have internships at animal control, pet food companies, boarding facilities, dog training facilities, so that, you know, we can expose our students to these careers. So I coordinate a lot of those internships. And then we also have some courses that focus more on the human-animal bond and some of the more social aspects, societal aspects of companion animals. And certainly within our program, the reason we have a companion animal program at all is that we do have a very strong research area in companion animal nutrition at the University of Illinois. And in fact, many of the advances that have contributed to the excellent pet foods we have today have come from work done here at Illinois. So we have courses in nutrition as well.
Yeah. We mentioned the Illini podcast and Pet Extravaganza.
Yes.
What other kinds of outreach efforts are part of the program?
Well, so far those are the big two that have stuck, and we've talked about a lot of other things. We basically take a lot of requests from 4-H groups, different groups who want us to come out and talk about pet care, you know, a lot of youth activities. And we are also talking in the planning stages of putting out online materials, pet care materials for people to use. So those are still in development, though. Petstravaganza takes a bit of time.
Yeah, the way it's got a lot of organization.
It's a big effort and a lot of organization involved in that.
Yeah. The Department of Animal Sciences at the U of I was the first in the country to establish a program in companion animal biology. I imagine that that this has spread now, that Illinois is no longer the only one, and the program's been around now for a number of decades.
Right. We started the research program with the nutrition started in the 70s, and then the other coursework followed. You're right. There definitely are more universities expanding their animal sciences coursework to include companion animals. But for the most part, animal sciences departments are still traditionally livestock-based and are still production-based. And I do think Illinois is one of the leaders in providing those other opportunities for our students. And it's really... It's something we've really got to work on, because you see so many more students coming from an urban background that really want more than the cattle and pig and poultry production. They really are interested more in the companion and recreational animals.
And there are so many opportunities. You mentioned them earlier here, just a moment or two ago. There's so many career opportunities for people who are interested in animal welfare and companion animals, from the pet care industry to work at shelters and work at outreach and that kind of thing.
And the pet care industry is crazy. We spend something like $40 billion a year, and that goes up by 3 to 5% every year. So for our students, we're just thrilled to tell them that, because that means careers for them. But it's just staggering.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon. If you've got a question about companion animals, give us a call this afternoon. Amy Fisher is a cat aficionado. She also has a dog. She and her husband have a dog and 8 cats. And Carol Lindholm is with us this afternoon. She's one of our regular guests here on the program. She's a dog trainer with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, and she's got a couple of dogs. Amy is in this afternoon for Jim Keel, who's out in the Great White North.
So I believe he was lucky and has snow this year.
Yeah, he's got snow this year. So listeners, if you've got a question, a comment, if you'd like to join the conversation this afternoon, give us a call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Well, we've come through a really cold spell here. Maybe we should talk a little bit about the challenges of the season, of the cold weather for people and animals. It's a time of the year when everybody's got a cold nose.
Well, and the weather is so odd. It was so very cold these last few days, and then this weekend is going to be almost balmy. But, you know, and I can't help but think, well, because I just think this way, people that leave their animals outdoors when it's just so cold, and we haven't had enough cold weather for them to acclimate to it. And I'm always so grateful that, you know, my two have a nice warm home in which to live, and they sleep on the bed, and they live a life that any dog would love to live, and not all are that fortunate. So I just hope when it gets as cold as it does that people are cognizant that if you don't want to bring them indoors, at least bring them into a garage or provide them shelter, because if you're cold, so are they.
Yeah.
Just the way I sum it up.
Yeah. Let's take a call now. A listener in Tuscola, line 4. Hi.
Oh, I have a question for Carolyn. We have a 3-year-old Pekingese, which we rescued, and he's biting. He bit our neighbor, which I was appalled at. And then right before Christmas, he bit my husband when he was trying to take something away from him that he was chewing up. My question is there any hope for a biter?
Well, how badly did he bite? Let's not excuse his size.
The first one on the neighbor jumped up on her leg, bit her. Fortunately, she had on heavy clothing. It didn't break the skin. My husband, it was very deep. We had to go to the doctor. It was a vicious, it wasn't just a don't take it away from me. It was truly an attack. And then afterwards, it's like nothing happened.
Well, as far as your dog's concerned, nothing really did. He just did what was coming naturally to him. So how long have you had him?
A year.
And these were the first two incidents?
Yes.
And did you see any behavior leading up to this that would make you think twice about taking something away from him?
Part of it is we've been very cautious because we didn't know his history, and so we've purposely not allowed him to be around a lot of strangers, or, you know, we've monitored him fairly closely. It's like we've kind of lulled into a sense of, oh, he's a wonderful little dog, and now he's, just last night my husband tried to put him into his, he told him to go into his kennel, he wouldn't go. My husband reached down to escort him into his kennel, and he started to growl at him.
Mm-hmm.
He's never done that before.
No, because look what's happened now. He's gotten away with, in his eyes, murder.
Right.
So he's not going to have to, he knows what he can resort to.
So how do we modify his behavior?
First of all, let's do one thing. Let's first take him to a veterinarian, make certain that there's nothing that's causing him any distress, discomfort. Just get a nice physical behind you.
Okay.
And see how he interacts with the veterinarian.
Okay.
And watch how your veterinarian handles him.
Okay.
And those would be two good cues for you to pay attention to.
Okay.
And make sure you tell your veterinarian that what has happened. So I think more veterinarians get bit by small dogs than big dogs. So make sure that they know that going in,
okay,
that you want him examined because he has bitten. Did your neighbor, what was she doing when he bit?
Nothing. I was taking him on a walk. She walked out of her, and her son was out in the yard, and I was talking to the son, and the dog was standing by my side. The mother came walking towards us, and he acted like he was happy to see her. Tail was wagging, jumped up and down. She got within the leash length. He jumped up and bit her on the leg.
Mm. Yeah, and tail wagging can be difficult to discern because often dogs that are preparing to attack wag their tails. But not wagging, they wag it stiffly.
Oh.
But it's wagging nonetheless.
Right.
So let's start there and rule out any physical cause for discomfort.
All right.
And then we're going to have to back up, mm-hmm, and we're going to have to... I don't want to say that you made a mistake, but keeping him away from other people for the last year,
mm-hmm,
in retrospect, that might not have been the wisest course of action.
Right.
But then on the other hand, he may... Where did you get him from?
It was a lady that had gotten him from another person. I think there was probably some biting history because we were told he'd had five homes.
Okay.
So, and we have small grandchildren, and so I just couldn't let him be around.
No.
But when somebody comes to the door, there's no consoling him. He's just acts so vicious.
Okay, so now we've got another component. So when people come to the door, he behaves
right,
the same.
And sometimes he'll settle down, and he's okay with a person, but a man came the other day, and I just had to excuse myself and take him out and put him in another room and shut the door.
And how did you do that?
I can pick him up. I can...
Okay.
You know, I can handle him. He's never turned on me yet, but after seeing what he did with my... And my husband's always been very good to him. He's,
mm-hmm,
the one that walks him most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
To see him sort of turn towards him that way, I'm thinking...
Well, it wasn't that he turned on your husband. Your husband was trying to take something away from him that he treasured.
That he wanted.
What was it? Do you remember?
Yeah, he had gotten into the trash can, which he'd never done before, and gotten a wrapper off of a stick of butter.
Mm-hmm.
And he was underneath the kitchen table, shredding it.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, he's never gotten anything out of the trash before, and he knew it was contraband. But
well, no, he didn't.
Didn't.
All he knew was this was his prize and treasure, and nobody was taken away from him. He doesn't know. They don't know it's contraband.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen, when I was doing Golden Rescue, I remember a dog that severely attacked, severely, over a Kleenex.
Oh.
So, it becomes, right, it's a possession issue.
Yeah. My concern is, I don't want to get rid of the dog, but yet I don't feel like we can have the neighborhood meanie. And when warm weather comes and the kids are out playing in the yards and whatever, we always have to tell the neighbor kids, don't get too close because he rears on his leash at them. And I'm sure we just don't know what to do.
Yeah, this is a really hard one because if he's been rehomed four times, you're the fifth home.
Yeah.
He is 3 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He has exhibited biting behavior. He has possession issues.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest that you get in touch with, and we'll try this. This is going to be kind of, your last resort, but the ASPCA here does have behaviorists on staff.
Okay.
And I also know some people that could work with you, that I could talk to you about off air.
Okay.
But the ASPCA, and they have a website.
Okay.
And we're fortunate enough to have them in our community, and they have behaviorists on staff that you could work with.
Okay.
And they can actually see this behavior. You can sometimes learn to understand what's going to, what precipitates the behavior so you can avoid it, but you can't walk on tiptoes around a dog your entire life.
Right.
Nor can you expect your grandchildren to.
Right. Exactly.
That's not realistic.
No.
In the meantime, I would keep him on a house line, which would just be a light, not necessarily a leash, but a light lead.
Oh, uh-huh.
So if your husband needs to take something away from him, you're not going to be forced to interact with a dog as much as you, so you've got something to move him around with.
Oh, okay.
So when people come to the door, you've got control of the dog. You don't have to pick him up and move him. You can just remove him from the scene without having to touch him or force him or push him or put yourself in position getting bitten.
Right.
That's what I would do.
Okay.
And in the meantime, I think if I were you, I would probably hang up and look them up online and give them a call.
I will do that. I appreciate your time. Thank you so
welcome.
Much. Bye-bye.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. It's the day we talk about dogs here on the program. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. We've got about 5 minutes left in this portion of the program. Our guests this afternoon, dog trainer Carol Lindholm with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana and Amy Fisher of the Department of Animal Sciences here at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. So why do smaller dogs
they get away with murder. I mean, they just do because they're small and they don't hurt. But in this case, I would imagine this dog has a history of learning that this behavior will stop people from taking things away from him, people from approaching him, but hard to say.
Yeah, without his history, it's really hard.
And that's something you run into when you have, you know, but it's not fair. You can't say to yourself, well, this dog's been in three homes, so I don't want it because what could it possibly do? It could be a perfectly fine dog that was in the wrong homes. But in this case, I think that she's got her work cut out for her.
Yeah. Well, I work with somebody who has an animal that's been in a number of homes, and it was a little rough going at the beginning, but things are working out beautifully now.
Certainly. And, you know, you can go to a shelter or a rescue group. And that's why I said rescue groups, they want that history. If a dog is bitten, you cannot, in good faith, take a dog that you know is bitten, somebody, or even another animal, and place it in a home without some repercussion. So, as sad as it is, that's the case.
Yeah. Let's take another call here before we're out of time. Line one, Muhammad, will have to be rather quick, though. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to add something to the lady that has the little dog who bites. I've experienced that. I got a dog from the shelter, and he just, when it came, push came to shove, he would rather bite you than give up something good he had. And I think that letting him sleep on the bed was the worst thing we ever did.
Mm-hmm.
He actually raised his leg and peed on my husband one time when my husband was sitting on the bed. And that just made it really obvious that not only was the bed his, my husband was his, and we had no authority. We had to really back off, train him, you know, he already would go in the cage, but we started putting him in there at night,
mm-hmm.
and he just became a lot nicer dog.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about all I have to say. I think it really made a difference.
Well, thanks. That's good advice.
And that's one of the type of thing that a behaviorist will work with you on, those
exactly.
kinds of issues. When to feed, where they sleep. Those
and he has a
issues.
Crate, you know.
And, yeah.
So that dog did.
Okay, very good. Well, we'll wrap it up here. How about that?
And next month is February already.
How about that?
Amy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Amy Fisher with the Department of Animal Sciences at the University of Illinois and Carol Lindholm with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. We'll be back with Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm on the first Friday of February here on the Afternoon Magazine. And don't forget the Illini Pet Pod, Amy's podcast. It's what she hosts. And the easiest thing to do would be just to Google that, Illini Pet Pod. Okay, very good. Thank you. very much, the two of you.
Thank you.